Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's time for Point Taken. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Bride.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Tuesday show, Kristen and Steve. And when you see the words hate crime, I mean, it's a term, phrase, words that, frankly, we've heard way too much of. The latest shooting in this country. San Diego Mosque, the Islamic Center of San Diego, Claremont neighborhood, about 11:43, so it'd be about, 1:43 our time yesterday afternoon. Two younger men walk in, killed the security guard, who apparently saved lives because of his heroism, and then killed two members of the mosque, Muslim mosque. These things are so frustrating to me. Obviously, my personal history and what I dealt with is when I was mayor. It's such a sad, sad thing that these things, and jump in wherever you want, these things become so routine that it's not the lead story on everything that we talk about. And
well, I think this one actually is the lead story, at least for me. As I was checking things this morning, it was one of the lead stories. But what stood out to me is when I checked, the different tickers or whatever, as far as I keep track of this. So the mass shooting tracker or the gun violence archive, the mass shooting tracker has us at 187 U.S. mass shootings in 2026 so far. And I was
and it's May.
And I was thinking about the fact that does it take it being a hate crime for it to actually break through the news cycle? Because I was referencing all the shootings in 2026 so far. You know, the one that happened in Oklahoma this month where 23 people were shot. I was like, that didn't even get on my radar.
Yeah, that was a lot of mass casualties. Yeah.
And that's not to take anything away from how terrible this is, but it is a both and as far as how many shootings there are, how numb we get to it, unless it feels like it's something that hits home. And I think when it's targeted random violence, like a religious attack in a religious setting, it is really scary, and it is front page news, but it is also just how young these two young men were.
17 and 18.
And it would not surprise me as we find out more information about them, the parts of the internet that they hung out on, how there may be similarities we end up finding that were similar to the Abundant Life shooting. Because what we know so far is there was some hateful rhetoric, some racial pride statements. One of the mothers was the one who called it in, because she noticed
2 hours before it happened,
because she noticed that her guns were missing.
Yep.
And she thought her son was suicidal.
Yeah, so she had concerns. And by the way, that's what parents need to do. She did everything she had to do.
Well, and also, but that's also access to the gun.
Yeah. And if somebody, this one sort of hits me two ways. One, it's just incredibly, you know, horrible. But the fact is, many of the things that I've been calling for years, higher security at these places of worship, which they've essentially all done. There's armed security guard here.
Yeah, but like also someone has to pay for it.
Yep. Absolutely. And that's a cost that the members of these communities they're now being forced to pay because of shootings like this, going well back into our last 20 years or so. And here we have notification from parent in advance that something might happen. She thought he was suicidal. These individuals obviously were targeting this mosque, and that's why it's a hate crime. And I think that even despite our best efforts or their best efforts, we still end up with these stories. So the origin story of why this is happening, we could spend the whole program bringing on expert after expert why these young men feel this way, access to weapons, what laws will work, red flag laws, more security, all of these things I've talked about endlessly for in my life since 2012, long time, and yet they still happen. And it's just so frustrating to me because at some point, I don't know what to do.
Well, I mean, I think that's how everyone feels.
Yeah, I mean, but it's just frustrating. I'm not a guy that likes letting that's how we feel, and then just you move on. I hate that. I like to get stuff done. I use a different word when I speak in public. But it's like, they did the right thing. They had security.
And yet we still have
traffic. Thank God.
And it's also California, right? California has much stronger gun control laws than a lot of other states.
Which some knucklehead who does what we do for a living will make. Well, they have the toughest laws. They still, you know, that's the argument we're going to hear on Squawk Radio. I get it.
But this also comes back to the idea of regulation for online. And this is, it is wrapped up into so many different things and so many different failings of lawmakers and how they've moved to protect people and the fact that gun violence is a public health crisis in more ways than just being having access to guns. It is how young people are being radicalized online. It is isolation. It is mental health. It is all these different things. And yet it doesn't feel like there is substantial moves that are moving quickly to address any of it.
No, it's essentially America, or its leaders, I should say, and some of its citizens throwing up their hands and say, let's, you know, price of freedom. It's just the way it is in this country. And I always tell people when they ask me these questions about mass shootings, it does happen in other places, but not to anywhere close to the degree it happens in this country. And you can cite a lot of reasons for that, just the freedoms that people have, especially when it comes to firearms, all that stuff, the ability of people to, you know, weaponize their anger, which is sort of a way that we deal with things in this country that maybe they don't do in as much in other places. Save the texts that say, well, and they just use knives in the UK. So I don't care. You're not going to kill 20 people with a knife.
Knives are not as lethal as guns.
No. These weapons can kill lots of people very fast. And again, I'd be curious your thoughts about this. Setting up in the context that I did, that we seem like this is a very tough gun law state. We have certainly had the places of worship in that state and elsewhere have sort of hardened their defenses. They had a security guard, unfortunately lost his life. He saved many lives, so he is a hero, the gentleman who did that. All of these ideas that we have about where we should put our assets, what we should create laws for, I don't see any way forward in the near future with this administration or our elected leaders in Congress to do anything about this. So we are essentially in a position, this is what we get. Welcome to America. And I don't like it. 855-616-1620. If you have thoughts, there's a lot on our plates today, a lot to talk about. But if you have thoughts on this, a shooting in San Diego at a mosque, 3 people dead, including the heroic security guard, 2 members of the mosque who, I was reading some of the testimony about them, family men, good men. Send them our way, 855-616-1620. Signing Unlimited WTMJ talk and text line. It is 1017 on 620 WTMJ.
Welcome back to Point Taken. I'm Kristen. He is Steve. We were reflecting on yesterday's shooting in San Diego at the city's largest mosque and feeling, as we always do after these happen, wildly frustrated and lacking anything new to say, but also understanding that you can't not address it. Although there are many mass shootings where we don't address it because there's not a racial aspect to it. There's not a religious aspect to it. There's not a random, just I'm here praying in the middle of my day and there is no connection between the victims and the shooters whatsoever. And just the scenario that plagues our country in this unique way.
Somebody asked about, and I didn't see it if he did. The president didn't have any comments about the shooting. I've not seen that. I was scouring things this morning. I didn't see that. This administration is not responsible for the shootings, but I'm always interested in how they respond to them. We have a bunch of texts on it, but one of the texts says reinstitute the assault weapons ban that goes all the way back to Bill Clinton. Yeah, maybe. Here's one from the 414. The answer is easy. More cars, more accidents, more guns, more shootings. I mean, it's a simplistic way to look at it. When are people going to learn? Banning guns and making more laws is not going to stop this. If someone is intent on these crimes, they will get guns. If all guns were gone, they will make bombs. They will use cars, large vehicles, banning guns. Yeah, we're not going to ban guns.
That's the thing. It's like we can say there's, you know, more guns, more crime, which I do. I mean, more shootings. Like, I do agree with that. But at this point, that is so low on the feasibility of options and solutions in this country as far as like actually taking people's guns, which most politicians are never even calling for. Like this, that's such a scare tactic created by the NRA and talking points there. But very few people that are elected positions. I mean, how many times do you hear Democrats being like, "I'm a gun owner," blah blah blah, and to try to like ingratiate themselves to other gun owners. And so that is so far down the list as far as taking people's guns. But like red flag laws, which. Would that have helped here? I don't know. Gun safes. Would that have helped here? I don't know. I mean, having parents be like, it sounds like this mom did the right thing as far as calling it in. But as far as if you knew that if your gun is used in a crime, that you are also held accountable.
Which happened in that Michigan high school shooting.
Like, does that make people more proactive in locking up their guns? I don't know. Like, there's other things. I feel like we're smart enough and can be creative enough, and it's like also mental health funding. And it's also, you know, making some regulation on what internet sites are allowed to, you know, and we're going to talk about sin later as far as what we've now not only legalized, but profiting off of.
Yeah. I guess for me, you know, that I've said what I've said in the first 22 minutes of the program, we're a country that often chooses guns in our response before almost anything else. We're a generally angry culture. We've talked about how people, was it just yesterday, we talked about how people behave on social media and, you know, just losing their mind, angry people. And we're a country that's now, for a lot of different reasons, celebrates the angry young man, and for that matter, the angry older man. Because let's be honest, most of these are men that are committing these crimes, not a lot of women. I'm hard pressed to think of a woman who has done anything like this.
Well, Natalie Rupnow.
Yeah, one out of.
No, I know. I mean, it is very few women.
Yeah.
It is also, despite the talking points, it is also very few trans people.
Yeah. So, yeah, which is a popular talking point now from some people.
It's largely young white men when you look at the actual stats as far as the random shootings.
Texas said guns should be individually insured. If you want to own guns, you got to be responsible for how they use. Yeah, I mean, that's could be a possible solution. The mother thought the kid was suicidal. You had guns in the house. That's an honest question you should ask the mom. We've obviously had examples, Sandy Hook, where the mother actually encouraged her son to try to get him more, I don't know, socialized to go to a gun range and then ended up killing all those first graders. Again, parenting, access on the internet. Anger, angry culture, access to firearms, hate towards people who look or whatever.
Different
than you do.
Whether it's political, racial, religious.
More simply, hate diversity. All of those things have created a culture where in this country we want to kill each other. Literally. And that now we're here talking about another situation where in this case, it's a religious faith group that has been targeted. And as we'll learn a lot more about this as it gets fleshed out, as reporters do what reporters do. But it'll get dumbed down by Squawk Radio. It'll get dumbed down by the fact that people just move on to the next one or move on to the next hot topic. And I'm not really optimistic. I fear for our future. I fear for my grandkids' future, my kids' future, and what life is like in this country when anger, political anger to some degree, creates a culture like this. I don't like it. It pisses me off. But again, we've gone through a lot of things. There's no clear, it's not an easy one. If it was an easy one, we'd fix it. It's not easy.
Well,
it requires.
I'm still giving a lot of credit. If it was easy, we'd fix it.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, given the leadership we have, which we're going to talk about. We're going to get to a lot of things today. Thanks for all the texts. Some good comments. I just don't know that any one thing is going to be the answer here. And I do believe, as I just said, We as a texter agrees with me, we're breeding this in our country, the anger towards each other. And if you think being a internet troll or spreading hate online is not a problem or that's your freedom, well, you may have sowed the seeds for some of this stuff over the last few decades. And we're seeing it in played out every day across our country, latest from San Diego. We'll take a quick break here. All this week on WTMJ, we're honoring our first responders, point taking and celebrating Heroes Week every day, including today at 11:35, sharing the stories of the men and women who demonstrate their commitment to our communities and their professions. Throughout the day, you'll hear all the stories on WTMJ shows, including this one. Salute to Service, presented by Waterstone Bank and sponsored by Mission 94. unique circumstance today, which we'll tell you about at 11:30, sort of challenged us to make it work, but we will make it work.
We will make it work.
And it'll be our second of five honorees, a great officer, longtime officer from the Milwaukee Police Department. All right. What do we got coming up
Coming up next, in the next half hour, a $1.8 billion slush fund that could help Trump allies. A very unique, shall we say, deal as far as dropping a lawsuit and getting this instead.
Deal's a kind word.
Especially when you're both the plaintiff and...
Yeah, and as you heard me talking, as I left my mic on, they brought in Attorney General Todd Blanche right away.
Yeah, they're already
in front of the House committee to talk about it, because this is landmark bad things done by an administration who seems intent on just breaking every norm, every law that they can to benefit certain people. And I always say that I'm not shocked, but I am shocked, because this is like one more.
This one is.
Everybody reacted last night when this story was breaking. It is nuts. Anyway. Jen 36 on this Tuesday edition of Point Taken. She's Christian Brown. I'm Steve Scalise. Thanks for joining us. If you miss any or all of our shows, a couple ways you can do that. You can go to your favorite podcast location, platform, and just put Point Taken in. It'll take you to all of our shows and all of our great content. You can certainly go to WTMT.com and find it there on the podcast page, all of our stuff. Or just get the newsletter, and we give you all of those links in
plus
one.
Plus more
on Sunday mornings at 9.
It's really the best way to get all things,
yeah.
Steve and Kristen.
Because there's bonus content, which is something we've been trying to do a lot more of this year. I got to say, when this next topic was mentioned, when I first heard it, I forgot which. I might have been watching Fox because I was jumping around last night. And they, of course, approached it in a different way than maybe CNN did, because CNN just couldn't believe it, including Paul Reed, who I have a ton of respect for, former CBS, now CNN. She's their legal expert. The president and his administration has created a $1.8 billion taxpayer fund. And we have some audio of the president talking about this. Wait till you hear this comment. But
so it came out of, so he, if you don't remember.
IRS lawsuit.
He was suing the IRS.
Yeah.
And it was a $10 billion lawsuit.
Right.
And so this is now a deal, a settlement, that he gets a $1.776 billion fund to compensate those who claim they were targets of government weaponization. And they also get an apology.
Yeah, which I think was important to the president.
But the problem here is that he was suing people who report to him.
Right.
One thing to be a private citizen, but he's no longer a private citizen.
No surprise. Anyways. No surprise. I've not been a supporter of the president's since he started, came on the scene. Not a fan. I thought he was a shifty businessman way before that. But regardless, this is a escalation of what I think is some of the most criminal behavior by a president ever. I know it's ever. That's a strong statement, but this is nuts. Especially how this got linked now to giving the January 6th rioters
coup forgiveness, not student forgiveness, coup forgiveness.
Not just forgiveness, money in some cases because they were wronged.
Speaking of which,
go ahead.
We're up to about. But somewhere between 33 and 40 of the pardoned insurrectionists have been rearrested, charged, or sentenced for crimes, including weapons violations, home invasion, making terroristic threats against public officials, and child exploitation.
Yeah. Not the best individuals in the world. I called them rioters then. I call them rioters now. That was one of the most shameful days in our country's history. They weren't patriots. If you think they were patriots, I don't know what you're looking at. They beat up on Capitol police officers and other people. That's never going to be defensible to me, so don't make the argument. Don't care about your text on it. Don't agree with it. As much as I say I welcome all, I'm not welcoming that because that's stupid. Just like arguing the 2020 election is stupid. Sorry if I hurt your feelings. This is absolutely nuts. Like, what's the line? I can't wait to talk to Bill about this on Friday. What's the line where a president does something or says, and we have a clip from the president on this. Wait till you hear this. Let's play it.
The Justice Department has this new fund that was announced today, $1.7 billion.
Yeah.
Why should taxpayers pay for the January 6th?
Well, it's been very well received, I have to tell you. I know very little about it. I wasn't involved in the whole creation of it and the negotiation. But this is reimbursing people that were horribly treated. It's anti-weaponization. They've been weaponized. They've been, in some cases, imprisoned wrongly. They paid legal fees that they didn't have. They've gone bankrupt. Their lives have been destroyed. And they turn out to be right. I mean, it was a terrible period of time in the history of our country, and they worked on it. I know the Justice Department, it's really been working on it very hard. There's been numerous other occasions over the years where things like this have been done, but these were people that were weaponized and really treated brutally by a system that was so corrupt, with corrupt people running it, and they're getting reimbursed for their legal fees and the other things that they had to suffer.
Okay, first off, they were tried and convicted in a court of law. They weren't railroaded. They weren't just condemned to a prison cell with no... They all went through the process. And they were found guilty. And some served, some were serving. This president pardoned all of them, including some people that did some really heinous things. So stop with that. They weren't wronged. What else did he say in there? None of this stuff makes any sense to a normal human being. I'm sorry. It makes no sense. If you're the most strident, ardent, whatever term you want to use, Trump supporter. So you want the president now to take our money again.
Our money.
Taxpayer dollars to reward criminals for bad behavior who were found guilty in a court of law. That's what you want now.
It's just wild to me as far... What happened to all the Doge people? Where are all the people who have on repeat... Waste, fraud, and abuse, waste, fraud, and abuse, waste, fraud, and abuse. It's just like, but none of this, the arch, the reflection pool, the ballroom, this like January 6th fund, like none of that is, like that's all a good use of money?
Texture said, how many people you think still support this stuff, the stuff you just listed?
Well, this is so today is primary day in a bunch of states, right? This is the thing that we're watching. Bill Cassidy just lost because obviously there is a lot of Trump supporters in the base. For primary Republican voters in Louisiana. We're going to see what happens to Thomas Massie. We saw, who was the other one who just fell? We're going to see what happens to John Cornyn. Like, there is clearly still we saw what happened in Indiana. So there is still enough primary Republican voters who none of this bothers them, and they will take down anyone who stands up to Trump. And so there is still, and we'll see again, what happens today, but like there is still a legitimate fear for some Republican lawmakers that if they are an enemy of Trump, they will lose their jobs.
The only one that
because there's enough people who support this.
Yeah, that's why I asked. If you support it, let me know why on the text line 855-616-1620, Siding Unlimited, WTMJ. Let me know why you support this. Tell me why, specifically, in two sentences or less. Tell me why you support it. And I'm sitting here thinking, if there's no line for anything, and here's my line. When this president, this administration does something, anything, any of the things you listed, Kristen, or anything we've talked about in the past, if the other side did it, you would immediately condemn it and Squawk Radio would go.
They did. I mean, this is the Biden crime family. This is Hunter Biden. This is all the things in the past that as far
but
as.
For what, this, they don't, because it's their guy doing it. That's you're a hypocrite. That's the definition. Okay for us, not for them. It's like, no, not the same rules. And that's this is why when you ask me about politics and how I can do it, this is what's driving me nuts. This will send me to an early grave because I don't like it.
Or an early retirement. I guess you're not actually, you're already past retirement age.
So I am.
You're already doing overtime.
I'm already on Medicare. Yes, I am. I'm officially, yeah.
How do you like it so far?
It's been fine. Yeah. Right. I mean, I've been healthy. So
that's true.
When you're healthy, it's not a big deal. So when you're not healthy, we'll see if you like it or not. All right, we'll take a break. Again, tell me why. I'm curious.
Tell me why this is okay.
Yeah. If you're one of those people that, whatever that number is, 30%, 35%, what's his latest polling number? 34% approval rating, lowest of any president in like forever. Tell me why that is. And give me a real reason, not just because Harris or because Biden. I need something a little more substantial than that. Tell me what it is. We'll wait. Quick break. Talking about the new fund that the president and his allies are going to use to reward bad behavior, including the January 6th rioters. Now, Texture makes an interesting point about reconciling the behavior, and the point they're making is basically people who sort of identify as Republican or conservative who don't really pay attention to the details of this administration just think their life is better with a Republican in office. I guess that's probably some people.
So is it like, so I'm also trying to think, because you think about all the promises that were made in the campaign. And certainly movement on immigration, we know. Stock market's been great.
Yeah.
Prices, no. Gas right now, no.
Healthcare, no.
Healthcare, no.
Crime.
Crime.
Mixed.
Yeah. I think violent crime has gone down. So as far as the tangible things beyond just the psychological partisan thing that we all do to a certain extent of like, well, my guy's in there, so it has to be better because you have to believe that, right? Is it? I mean, I guess if you're not paying attention to politics, is life the same? Is it better? Is it worse?
I would say that declining support for this president, and I do believe in sort of those approval numbers, that would indicate that even solid Trump voters are now saying, this is not something I signed up for. And it's interesting that I wasn't aware of this, and I have to double check this, but Texture says these special fund expires at the end of his term. So this president can do it, but I'm not letting that potential next president, maybe it might be in the other party, they're not getting that access to any of that money to prevent the wrongs. You know, I guess I continue to be shocked, but I guess not as much as I would expect given this president.
Is it just because there's so many different, because I put it in as our recommendation in the newsletter a couple weeks back by Isaac Saul in Tangle News, just like a 6,000 word essay outlining all of the different aspects of self-dealing and corruption that Trump, his son, his family, this administration is doing, has done.
Trading stocks.
Is it just that there's too much for the, you know, it's like sometimes like big numbers we can't actually wrap our head around, and that's why like stories do better than data. Is it just because there's too much and it's too legalese for the average person to actually understand how
maybe
unprecedented this is?
Yeah, maybe. I know a lot of people who were Trump supporters who just don't, I think you've said this before, they just don't pay attention that closely. So it's for them, it's like, my 401k, especially my age, 401k is looking great. And I'll be honest, it looks great. Crime being what it is or whatever. So there's positives. And they just ignore everything else. I will say that I've seen the conversation, online conversation in my friend group, quiet down, where the staunch Trump people who spend all their time online, just maybe it's because I've cleaned my follower list up a little bit.
You've muted all of them?
Yeah, maybe that's part of it. But that sort of quieted down, because at some point it's sort of embarrassing. All right, so this is we'll play it after the break. Speaker Mike Johnson, who calls himself a man of faith, although I would remind Speaker Mike Johnson that political lying, still lying. There's no get out of jail free card for that stuff. Still lying. And his day will come, trust me. So we'll play a clip from him sort of on the same wavelength as this, where stuff that we would say, no, that's not right. Maybe we let these guys do it. We'll get to that after this on Point Taken.
Look, you know, the salary of Congress has been frozen since 2009. You know, when you adjust for inflation, a member of Congress today is making 31% less than they made in that year. It goes down every year. And over time, if you stay on this trajectory, you're going to have less qualified people who are willing to make the extreme sacrifice to run for Congress. I mean, it's just people just make a reasonable decision as a family on whether or not they can come and move to Washington, have a residence here, a residence at home, and do all the things that are required. So the counter argument is, and I have some sympathy, look, at least let them like engage in some stock trading so that they can continue to, you know, take care of their family.
Less qualified? I don't know about that, actually.
But... Well, I actually do. I will say, I think there is a strong argument. I think Joe agrees with this, that there is a strong argument for actual reform when it comes to the benefits of our congressmen and our senators. And if you paid them a lot more, put term limits in, banned trade, like trading stocks and other potential reforms, ban them from becoming lobbyists after they've served, mm-hmm. like different things that are in there, but make the actual salary much, much more.
Yeah, it's a long time to have no pay.
Because
increase.
I do think that there we lose people to private, and this is at the federal level, this is at the county level, municipal level, like you really talented people who look at that job, how hard it is, especially on your like the personal aspect of it, and be like, I'm not going to do this. Like, I can make way more money coming over here. So I do think there's something there. But this is just bring up having a pay increase. Like, this is the fact that the direct tie to having basically inside information on the laws that you're making and how it benefits companies is way more perverse than just outright having a pay increase.
There's a reason why we have these laws, because it's illegal, and it should be illegal. And this argument, I hear what you're saying, but show me a congressman or woman who's worth less after than they when they started. So they're already kind of doing this illegally. So save me the nonsense.
So he's basically saying... people take this job because they know they can get rich.
Exactly. And you show me an example of someone that didn't get rich, and maybe I'll change my opinion. News is next on 620 WTMJ.
Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's time for Point Taken. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Braun.
Welcome back to the 11 o'clock hour. And Steve, are you a good neighbor? Would you consider yourself a good neighbor?
Well, first of all, you should ask my neighbors that question, but I think so. I try to be helpful.
We're gauging your self-awareness.
I try to be helpful. I answer their questions. You know, I'm in a sort of a different case study because people know who I am.
How many of your neighbors do you think voted for you?
I have no idea. the remarkable thing is most of them are still the same neighbors from when I was mayor. So
do you feel like you talk to your neighbors? Do you feel like you're friends with your neighbors? Do you guys do block parties?
We used to... The late Bob Johnson, who was a World War II hero, served on aircraft carriers, and was just an amazing human being who's since passed a long time ago, but he lived to be like 90-something. He would organize a mega block party every summer. So this is probably now 20 years ago. And then before that, every year before that, he did one of these things. That's the last time we had a block party. Mm. We're not connected in that way, but I know that when I was mayor, which is now 10 years ago, we still had neighbors doing block parties because they would invite the mayor to them and I would meet the residents. So I hope it still happens, but no, we don't currently have a, do you have block parties?
Kind of. I mean, I think since I live in the city, like we have the Locust Street Festival coming up, which is a River West, neighborhood celebration. That's, people from across the city come. We have Center Street Days. We have River West 24. So we have like a fair amount of like neighborhood celebrations. We've been talking about doing an actual, like, four-hour block party. That's like a Michael Sampson job if we're going to do it. But I feel like I talk to my neighbors a fair amount. Specifically, we've become actual friends with our neighbors directly across the street. And then everyone else in the neighborhood certainly always say hi, certainly always talk. Like, as people, we have a heavy foot traffic when I'm out doing my yard, constantly talking to strangers. But, yes.
So directly answer your question, the three neighbors so across the street and both sides, I've talked to all of them in the last week.
Okay.
Looking behind me, no, because there's a big fence separating us and I don't really ever talk to them. I don't know that. I know her a little bit. I don't know him at all. Both sides back, I know both of those people, just talked to them in the last month. So most of them, yeah.
Because why are we talking about this? So it is reported that Americans are spending more time at home, yet many have become strangers to their neighbors, especially young Americans who are increasingly unlikely to socialize with those living feet away. So it is in 2012, so 14 years ago, 51% of young Americans regularly engaged with neighbors. Today, that number has plummeted to 25%,
which is a big drop.
And so in general, we're not necessarily doing a great job of connecting with those in our neighborhood.
So what's the why?
Well, I think some of it sounds like as I was reading this article, this was from Axios, but I think the study itself was published a lot throughout last week. I saw multiple headlines on it. I think it comes back to similar what I'm finding with the interviews I'm doing for the documentary of a desire for ease, right? Like this everything we've been creating through AI and entertainment is like making your life easier, making your life have less friction, making things easier to do. And like other people, relationships with other humans is harder than isolating. It's not better for you, but as far as like having to deal with other people, even people that you love, is to deal with someone's other behavior, other feelings, other perspective. And it's just harder than not. but it also is less rewarding. And so I feel like the socialization of with your neighbors, maybe it's busy, maybe it's because you're just you have all of your entertainment that you need, literally carrying it in your pocket. But I also think there's just this avoidance of conversation because you don't want to do small talk or you don't know if you're going to get along or whatever. And so I think that has more to do with it as far as especially the socializing aspect of it.
Yeah, I think it's a couple of things. And you were talking, I was also scanning what I'd read earlier today, and scheduling is a part of it. People are just so busy, you know, they're always gone doing stuff, especially if they have kids. You know, shuttling kids back and forth is part of this. The other part is what we just were talking about for an hour, politics. It's uncomfortable when people don't vote the way you do or they put signs you don't like. That's essentially, my opinion, it's a conversation stopper.
But more than ever, we're sorted into our political leanings, yeah. Right? Like there's been books written as far as how people choose where they want to live based. I've had personal testimony of people saying that when they were moving to a new city, they drove around the neighborhoods during an election year to see which neighborhoods had which signs. And so like people self-sort.
You like that?
No.
I don't either.
I don't like campaign signs. I don't put lawn signs
out. I would
argue
a waste of time.
The only lawn sign I have is I have a, I think, what does it say? The one that I have in my yard right now is like very beautifully illustrated.
Chance,
no, yeah. It says, let's help each other.
That's nice.
It is. It's a really nice message.
What is the thing?
It's a pro-immigration. Like, it was a fundraiser for that. But I like the sign. I like the message.
I can't remember last time we had a sign in our yard just because of what
I don't like it because I feel like it. I understand from the campaign's aspect, it's good publicity. It's good, free publicity. But I think it also comes with some trade-offs as far as like the lawn sign wars that can happen in different areas that maybe spark more conflict than needed.
So do you talk to your neighbor out there in radio land or the internet world? Do you talk to your neighbors? And if not, why not? Or do you have a great relationship? And is it, like I said, part of it politics, schedule, just the way we socialize now, it's differently. One of the texters says we use social media to reach out to each other or messaging and all that stuff. We never had those options before. There was no messaging. You got on a phone or you walked over. That was your two choices, right? Or you ran into them at the grocery store, maybe three. That's it. It's different now. 855-616-1620. I just remembered the last sign I had in my front yard. Loyal Family Renovations, one of our great partners. They did my roof, and I put their sign in the front yard because they did such a great job, which people still talk about.
There you go.
That was it. A little bonus content for the great folks at Loyal Family Renovation. All right.
Do you talk to your neighbors? 855-616-1620.
It's a beautiful day in this neighborhood, a beautiful day for a neighbor. Would you be mine? Could you be
Maybe
mine?
Maybe we need more guys like him.
We certainly need more guys like him. Right? That is an absolute.
He would have been a guy, he's not alive anymore, but I would have loved to have talked to him.
Yeah.
Just a great interview because he was a pretty deep guy, a deep thinker, and transformed how we related to each other and kids and had a lot of thoughts about a lot of things. And, you know, no surprise, he was very good at what he did. Texts are coming in. I don't know if I buy it. Texter from the 414 says not many stay-at-home moms, not as many kids going to neighborhood schools.
Well, certainly not as many kids going to neighborhood schools. So as far as the idea that your kids' classmates are also your neighbors is less... Like, you can't really assume that anymore. I mean, at least in, like, certainly in the city of Milwaukee, maybe when you get to the suburbs, it's a little different.
Yeah, this is sort of a tangent, but I'm working on a piece with news about school boards and school districts and their decisions about allowing kids to move freely between districts. I'm not a fan. Some districts use...
You don't like open enrollment?
To a degree, but, I mean, there are some school districts that are really, really... maximizing what they can do, like up to 15-20% of their student bodies from somewhere else, and
say that's what Oak Creek is doing?
Yes, they're like 13-15%, and I don't want to give too much of the storyline away, but they're taking students that are from different counties. It's like, wow, you're not even a taxpayer, and you're. I'm still doing a research on it, but and other school districts, I think like Shorewood is doing this for financial reasons because they don't have enough.
They have an aging population.
Yes, they're old. They don't have kids, and they have these wonderful schools. They want to fill them up. So that's part of that story. So there's a lot to it. Yes, neighborhoods have changed. Yes, our lifestyles have changed. But I think going back to what we first started talking about with the violence in this country, one of the reasons we're talking about that is because people don't connect anymore. They hate each other, even often when they don't even know each other. And that lack of communication, kids not communicating effectively in face-to-face. You know, I said it before, we had phone or in person, and that was it. Now there's so many options and messaging and texting and God knows TikTok videos and Snapchat. Snapchat's still a thing?
It is still a thing.
Yeah. Do you use Snapchat?
I don't.
Okay. I never.
It's more of, I feel like it's more of a messenger than like a, here's a thing that I did and like putting it out to strangers. It's more about being, well, it's like text messaging, I think. I don't know. Someone will correct me.
I love this. Block party for this neighborhood, May 29th. Best neighborhood ever.
There you go.
That's awesome. And they, this person said they frequently exchange greetings, waving, and hollering hi. That's what we want. Here's from the 262. My wife and I are both 30. We talk a lot with our neighbors and have a shared spreadsheet for people to volunteer hosting Friday night bonfire.
I love that.
Man, you're talking spreadsheet. That's
spreadsheet gets involved, you know it's serious.
Somebody
in
that neighborhood
amazing.
Organized. Damn, that's impressive, 262.
That's awesome. I think, you know, it goes back to this. I see this come up on social media a fair amount of everyone wants a village. No one wants to be a villager.
Yeah.
And I think it's one of these things that we can look at and be like, oh, it would be great if we got along with our neighbors, or how nice would that be? But it's like sometimes like you got to take the ownership of being the first person to organize the thing, right? To organize the block party or organize the, ways to communicate with the people in your neighborhoods, or the one who's like, do you need any of these things? Send your teenager over to the family that has young kids and say, you know, go offer to babysit, or just like be the one to take initiative to be helpful to the people around you, and notice how then it probably will be returned to you. Because ultimately, one of the other things the Axios article said is how our ability now to find community online via shared interests is great. It's one of the best things about social media, right? Like you have a crocheting community that you have like really love or whatever, and you guys can talk about that. But the thing is, like, that person online that you can talk to may or may not be able to help you like jump your car when it is dead in your driveway.
Neighbors doesn't mean they live by you anymore. That's the
an online community doesn't necessarily mean that they live by you. And so the value of having people who are actually in proximity to your house and the help that they can provide, it's nice to be able to have those relationships in your actual, you know, quarter mile proximity.
I'm curious about your thoughts about this. Pam texts us from the 414. We talked to our neighbors who have a dog. Dogs are great connectors.
Great connectors. Great connectors.
I like dogs. What I don't like is two things. People who don't manage their dog's barking and it goes on for hours endlessly. And people that say their dog's name in response to the dog's barking, but the dog doesn't care that you say his name. The dog's going to keep barking. If you own a dog, this is my most frustrating thing about
it. Don't turn this into a rant.
Yeah, this was a rant, a short rant. If you own a dog, train your dog. You're not a trainer, homeowners, dog owners. Have someone train your
dog. So dog's not a great connector for you. You're never going to go talk to someone who has a dog. You're like, oh, now we're buddies because we're both at the, like, well, you don't have a dog. Kids are good connectors.
Kids are great connectors.
Kids are really good connectors.
Especially if they go to the same school because you see them all the time, all that school stuff.
But you know how, this is, you know what? And then we'll go to break. We share a driveway with our immediate neighbors. And for a long time, our neighbors who owned the house, they had moved to South Carolina, and they hadn't sold the house. So we were just taking care of their house while they were gone. And then it went up for sale. And now the people who live in that house are some young Gen Z men who own a smoke shop in downtown Racine. Mm. And in a lot of ways, they are exactly what you think 22-year-old young men would be like. And they're kind of, they keep to themselves. They're not a problem. But speaking of connection, they were having friends over, and they always party in their garage when they have friends over. And my dog, my 16-year-old Chihuahua, Cliff, just was out there, and they were petting him and being nice to him, and then gave him a little. They were like, can I give him a piece of brat? And it was like a very good moment for us to
connect. Your dog's 16 years old?
Yeah, he's an old guy.
Wow. Chihuahuas, that seems like
he's doing pretty well, too.
16.
But yeah, he is an old man.
All right, you still got a chance. There's some funny ones coming in as well. We'll chew up the neighbor story. You should get along with your neighbors. I guess that's my messaging. Because I can tell you a mayor.
Or at least give them a chance.
Yeah, I can tell you a mayor horror story about a neighborhood situation. You want to hear that? Maybe?
Is it the chicken one?
No.
The different one?
Yeah.
All right, yeah.
All right. We'll talk about during a break, see if it's worthy of the airing. Quick break. All right, we talked during the break. Mine's a horrific story.
Yours is a downer. And yeah. What I'm encouraged by is how many people are texting in really warm-hearted stories about their neighborhood, how they talk to their either a specific neighbor or a block party, or they walk the dog with the neighbor. So I'm feeling more encouraged as far as our listeners and how they feel about their communities. And I will say the caveat of when I think about the Axios article and when they say young Americans, because I think about the times when I lived in apartment complexes and like the transient nature of your 20s and feeling a little less connected to your neighbors versus your friends that you go and hang out with. I do think as you get older and you own a home, you feel a little bit more attached to your neighborhood. But we're not going to tell your story. We're going to tell my story of after Locust Street Fair last year, Frankie was 1.5 and she had this little used bike thing that you can, as a parent, steer from behind. But the bell itself wasn't broken, but how tightly it was on the bike, it was like it would swing, would spin around. And so I was walking home with her, and this Latino man.
You got 15 seconds.
Oh, crap. This Latino man, basically, who did not speak a lick of English, insisted on fixing it. And literally, we stood there for 10 minutes while he whittled down a stick so that he could shove it in there and so it would stop moving. And I've never seen him since, but he was just so adamant that he fixed it, and he was so kind, and we didn't share the language at all, and it made me love my neighborhood that much more.
That's a great story. Good job, that neighbor. Mine was basically my life was threatened, and I wasn't even involved in the conversation, so that's how crazy mine was. All right.
Honoring those who put their lives on the line to serve our communities. This is Steve Scafidi's Salute to Service. Presented by Waterstone Bank and sponsored by Mission 94. Here's Steve Scafidi and Kristen Bry.
Yes, every day this week we are celebrating some great men and women who do amazing work every day. Now, every year, Kristen, there's always challenges, and we've had this happen before. In the case of our honoree today, family emergency prevented them from being here. The officer in question, Officer Sean Berger, 25-year veteran, Milwaukee Police Department.
Wow.
And impressive just on that number. And I said, we're going to mix it up. We have younger officers, younger firefighters, more advanced tenured officers as well, and firefighters. His wife, Amy, nominated. So we're going to play the feature for you. You'll hear both of them, and then we're going to take a short break, and we're going to come back, and you're going to hear three direct pieces of audio from his wife, Amy, talking about what it's like to be married to a police officer, because none of this is easy, and those are very difficult roles. So I'd like to play for you the feature piece put together by producer Jazz that we do for all of our honorees, thanks to Waterstone Bank, Mission 94, and all our other great partners for making this possible. I'll give a quick heads up. Sean Berger is a 25-year veteran. He's been on the department's tactical team. He served the majority of his tenure all those years on the K-9 unit. He's the lead trainer for the K-9 unit. You'll hear about that in the piece. This is Milwaukee Police Department's and our Waterstone Bank and WTMJ honoree, 2 of 5, Sean Berger.
Hi, this is Officer Sean Berger with the Milwaukee Police Department K-9 unit. I'm the current handler of K-9 Apollo and former handler of K-9 Rocky.
Hi, this is Amy Berger. I'm nominating my husband, Officer Sean Berger, for the WTMJ Salute to Service Award.
I've been an officer for 24 and a half years, been on the K-9 unit for 14, the current head trainer for the unit for the past 8 years.
His dedication for the past 25 years to the police department and the community has been stellar. He's developed so many amazing relationships with people. When we have events like at Summerfest, he loves talking to anybody who will listen about canine stuff.
You had the legendary Rocky. That was an amazing dog.
He was like a light switch. He'd be very friendly around kids and people and would kind of force you to pet him. And then when you flip the switch into police mode, he was very strong-willed and did the job to the best of his ability. I try not to compare any dog to him.
When some of these events that you go to, you see some of the same people and you get to recognize their face. Well, how are you doing? How's Rocky? And everybody knows Rocky.
And the newest partner is Apollo.
I went with K-9 Apollo because it was the first non-German shepherd on our department's history. So he's a Dutch shepherd. And I thought later in life I would need a smaller dog to not yank me around. So he's a 58-pound dog compared to my 95-pound dog, and he pulls twice as hard. being he's 8 years old, you think he was two. He just go. Not having a human partner and having a canine partner has been a blessing for the last 14 years. Well trained and have saved me on many accounts. Just the physical presence of a dog can eliminate a lot of things. Reduce conflict between suspect and the officers and have a peaceful surrender.
What's the even top two things you've taken away from your career in public safety?
I think people that you get to meet, citizens, your fellow coworkers and stuff, and the camaraderie that you share, the banter, those are what I will take away from 25 years, the friendships that you make and stuff like that. And you hear Canine Apollo and Rat.
He's just built some really good, strong relationships in the community that way.
You hand somebody a leash, and you never know how it's going to go. Everyone's, it's a dog, it's easy, it's whatever. There's a lot of hours of training that go into it. I hope what people take from me is that I did my best to put a good canine team on the street, along with the other canine teams on our unit, that we trained them the best. We want to be the top tier.
He's passionate about the canine unit. He wants to make sure before he leaves that the young guys are coming in, continue with the passion to hopefully keep the program going for Milwaukee for decades after he's gone.
What does Salute to Service mean to you?
I love it that people take the time to honor people that serve. This award that you're presenting me with is for everybody that wears a uniform. Just recognize that the service that you did, not my personal service, but the men and women that go out on the street on a daily basis to make people safe. Thank you so much, everybody, for supporting our unit and for the 25 years that I've had to work for the department, and be safe and back each other up.
Milwaukee Police Officer Sean Berger, great guy, and one of the reasons we do that the previous week is just in case, and this is one of those just in cases, a family emergency today, could not be here. He is going to join us on a future show because I wanted to introduce him to the audience, so you'll be here for that. We're going to hear after the break from his wife, Amy, who nominated him, and sort of the perspective of a spouse of a first responder. I try to weave that in every year, and somebody asked me on email about why or how we pick, it's your nominations, the people just nominate, and some people become heavily nominated. I think one of our, I think our one tomorrow, firefighter, had the most nominations for one person I've ever seen.
And oh, wow.
He's a young firefighter, too. Might just be an awesome dude. And having met him once, I probably would agree with that. Thanks to the texture for saying love to Salute the Service. So we'll take a break. We'll hear from the spouse of Officer Sean Berger from the Milwaukee PD. I also try to, I don't always do this, but I try to recognize that we have two very large departments, Milwaukee Fire and Milwaukee Police. And we don't always have members, but they do some pretty amazing work, including Officer Sean Berger. So we'll hear from Amy Berger after the break, thanks to the great folks at Waterstone Bank, who have been here for many years with me on Salute the Service, and Mission 94, honoring our great, great first responders, 205 Sean Berger. We'll hear from his wife after this on Point Taken.
Back to Steve Scafidi's Salute to Service, presented by Waterstone Bank and sponsored by Mission 94.
As I said at the opening of this segment, our officer, our honoree from the Milwaukee Police Department, Sean Berger, could not be here because of a family emergency, but we certainly had spent some time with him last week. And part of that sort of pre-work was to talk to his spouse, Amy, who nominated him. And I don't do it every year. I was talking about what I do and don't do every year. We usually have one spouse, because I think that role is an important one. First responders, those are tough jobs. And we had an opportunity to interview Amy, and you heard a little bit of her in the clip, what it's like to be that person. So here's our first clip. It's never easy to be a spouse of a public safety professional, first responder, in this case, police officer. Tell me a little bit about what that feels like and what you think about when your husband goes off to work.
Oh, boy, I try not to think about that. My whole family is in law enforcement. My grandfather was, his father was, my uncle was. So I kind of grew up around it. But us wives, we have a good support network for each other when stuff does happen. Like, for example, we had the riots and everything. But I try not to think about that sometimes, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the support network.
It's so funny. I imagine when she married a cop, I wonder her family's like, of course he did.
Like, yeah,
if there's legacy. That much law enforcement in her family, yeah. As far as you marry guys like your dad.
Yeah, which you'll hear tomorrow, a legacy on the firefighter side. Same thing. There is tradition there, and they certainly respect that. How one changes in a job is really sort of an interesting one, especially in the first responder public safety world. Listen to Amy's take on that. if he has, how has he changed over those 25 years in his approach to his work or even in life? What has he learned from your perspective?
Well, sometimes not on the good side. You've come very, you get kind of disheartened at some of the things other humans do to others. It's hard. I mean, definitely it changes you, especially what you see and go through. That's for sure. But he just has to keep remembering that he is doing good for others, even though they some don't appreciate it.
I love the honesty there.
Yeah.
Because that's the real world we live in.
I mean, I don't know how, you know, any whether it's first responders, emergency room provider, I mean, either doctors, nurses, staff, how you aren't hardened to a certain extent. And I imagine part of the skill is having emotional barriers up because you can't just be devastated every single day without losing touch with what makes humans good.
Yeah, and the reason I wanted to feature Amy in this segment today is because when you do that tough job, you come home to your family in most cases, and they have to, you know, respond and react to what you're doing. And I always ask all of our nominators and our honorees this question. So this is Amy's response to that famous question. What does salute to service mean to you?
It's a lot of these officers and first responders do not get thanked every day as they should. You know, so it reminds them that, hey, you are doing good. We do appreciate you. We do see you, even though you're on the call, you're getting screamed at, yelled at. We appreciate you.
Again, I appreciate them. That's one of the reasons I started doing this when I started. It was one of the first things my first boss said, what would you like to do? And I go, having come out of the world that I came out of, you know, the story of Oak Creek, I said, it has to be this. Because I got to know these, you know, the Brian Murphys of the world and now Kamal Saini, whose mom was killed in the attack, was now a sheriff. I mean, it's part of my life. It's my story, too. And if we can share these stories, I'm trying to, as I said yesterday, personalize the people. So it's not just the department. It's not just, you know, that thing, that entity, that big thing out there that often can be seen as a, you know, a target in some sad cases or the enemy. They're not your enemy. They want the city, the community to flourish. They help that happen. They deserve your respect. Police officer from Milwaukee, 25-year veteran, Sean Berger. First of all, congrats on a great career. I know that at some point he's going to retire. He was wonderful to talk to. Amy, thanks for the nomination. You were fantastic. I wish your family well as you deal with your family emergency. But at some point, Sean Berger will be on the show, and we'll talk to him directly live on the radio and give him his opportunity. But thanks to my great sponsors, Waterstone Bank and Mission 94. Another one tomorrow, a young firefighter from Racine. That'll be interesting. We'll take a quick break here. Kristen will tell us where she's going to be off to this week after this.
All right, another Tuesday, another Talking Tuesday in the books. I will be gone tomorrow and Thursday.
Where are you going now, Kristen?
48 hours. So after tonight, I will be in Madison for Journey Mental Health. It's the second year in a row that I am moderating a fireside chat for their. Obviously, we know that May is Mental Health Awareness Month. And so tonight, I'm going to be talking to Molly Seidel, who is from Heartland. Heartland. And obviously won the bronze medal in her third ever marathon. So her story is wild, both as far as what she's accomplished as a runner, but also her mental health journey through an OCD diagnosis, an ADHD diagnosis, an eating disorder. So that's tonight. From there, I drive to my parents' house in Wisconsin Rapids so that I have a shorter drive to Cameron, Wisconsin, which is near Rice Lake. We are interviewing some young people tomorrow up in Cameron, which I'm really looking forward to. A couple high school students, a couple college students, a couple teachers.
Just in case.
Well, just in case. So, so we're doing that on Thursday. So we'll be, no, Wednesday. And then driving back to Rapids Wednesday night so that I can interview my cousin and my younger cousin and some of his friends in Rapids on Thursday. And then back in time to go to the Yelich home plate event Thursday night.
It's a busy week.
And I'll be back with you, Bill, and Joe on Friday.
So we'll get a recap on that. Maybe grab bag some of that stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. It'll be interesting to see what differences or similarities there are from kids growing up north and how different their polarization and political awareness and political thoughts are, or if they're the same.
So you're just going solo or you're the whole fam going?
No, I mean, Mike and Frankie are staying here.
Oh, so I'm going with
Bill Schultz from Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and our partner over at La Follette. But
you certainly have a busy 2026.
I do have a busy 26.
Like, you signed up for a lot. Well, you didn't sign up. You volunteered and or worked.
But it's very rewarding.
It is. And I can't wait to the finished product, and you'll tell us all about that, and we'll see it in
we'll have a screening.
Yeah, that'd be fun. Mm-hmm. So she'll be gone. I'll be back tomorrow. So I do know this. For all those fans of Chef Michael Fecker, he's going to join us. He's doing a fun event in June with Capri Communities, one of our great partners here at WTMJ, and he's one of their guest speakers along with Melinda Myers. They're both going to be on the show, but Chef Fecker's tomorrow. He's one of our my old show most favorite guests.
He's been on this show.
Yeah, we've had
him talk about like food supply.
Yeah, food deserts. Yeah. So he'll be here tomorrow. So I think it's 10:30, but don't quote me. He'll be just listening to the whole program. You'll catch him. But he's always fun. I haven't decided what else I'm going to talk about, but, you know, as you know,
you love stretching your legs when I'm not here.
We even play some different introductions, different music. I'm challenging Jazz right now. I might do one artist the whole show. Jazz is not even listening. Jazz is already working on stuff. All right. Safe travels.
See you Friday.
News is next on 620 WTMJ.